Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 172, recorded on March 8th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. As always, oh my God, we're here.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
And Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey.
You don't seem as perky.
I'm depressed.
Oh, how come? None of iPhone stuff
Apple,
to talk about?
Apple doesn't know how to innovate. Their stock's in the toilet. I'm going to have to buy a Windows machine.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, your iPhone for a
they're
Samsung
not selling
Galaxy.
Enough. They're selling, you know, not more iPad minis than iPads. It's over.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get a...
Oh, they're cannibalizing themselves.
Windows Phone 8.
I'm so...
Can I get a Symbian phone still?
I've been talking about this on my last couple of shows. I had Ken Ray and David Sparks on to talk about it, and then somebody, you know, gave some responses. And I guess I'm just getting frustrated. Is not the right word. And I said this in my show. I don't know what the right word for it is, but it's just sort of like, can we realize that Apple doesn't care? Like, only analysts and Wall Street people and stuff really, I think, at the end of the day, care.
Right. Well,
you know, Apple's even said they don't care.
I know. This is my point. It's like, why do we keep echoing? Like, so it's somewhat funny and annoying, I guess, to me at the same time. And I don't know how to respond.
Yeah.
I just laugh and then get annoyed and then laugh. So... That's
well,
how I'm feeling.
The cannibalization thing, I think, I don't understand why people have a problem with that. I guess it does on the surface seem like a bad thing, but it's only a bad thing to most other companies where they care about focusing on one product and trying to milk it for everything it's worth just forever, and then only out of necessity moving to something else, whereas Apple doesn't really mind... allowing their own products to outdo their past products, because either way they win.
All they care about is making really great products.
Yeah.
For their customers. And actually it's not even as much for the customers. They make stuff. I think I'm convinced, just like most successful things, that they make the stuff for themselves first. Like, how, let's make the coolest thing that we think is really cool. And then we'll figure out, you know, how much we have to sell it for, and all these other things will fall into line, and hopefully people will really like it. But we really like it, so odds are people are going to really like it.
Right.
Right? And right. That's what they try and do every day, is make great stuff that people are going to like, and then they let all that other stuff sort of fall in line. And the funny thing with this latest thing of them cannibalizing themselves, I would love to see Tim Cook come out and address these numbers and go, oh yeah, we're going to sell fewer iPads and more iPad minis this year. And they're at a lower price point and whatever, but we're still going to make more money than you. So you keep selling 10 times more than we do, but we'll make more money. So there's that.
Well, and there's the other thing that so many people are concerned about Apple losing ground to Android and not being
to
Android and not being the dominant player in the phone market. And this is one of those things I really don't understand, because Apple has almost never been the dominant player in any market except for iPods. For a very short time, and actually longer than anybody would have predicted.
Yeah, arguably smartphones for a little bit.
For a very short period of time, yeah. Like a couple quarters.
Yeah.
And they're still successful. They're doing what they do.
It's not what they set out to.
Yeah.
Like Tim Cook said in his thing, right? We're in the shareholder meeting. we're not about selling the most. We're about selling the best.
Yeah, there are way more Ford focuses out there than
direct quote, but I mean the gist of it.
Than high-end BMWs kind of thing. It's not about selling to everybody. It's not about making everything on the spectrum. It's about making the best stuff in the area that they want to focus on.
And then people will get on me, or you know, we'll get the response that, well, they got to still worry about the shareholders and the business and all that sort of stuff. And to that, I'm like, I want to point somebody to point and show where the business is failing.
Right. It's not.
They turn in record quarters every quarter. Maybe it didn't go up as much as the last quarter, but they're still making more than they have. Yeah. So, like, I think most businesses would be happy to have every quarter they make more money.
Yeah.
This is like a dysfunctional family where Apple is the high-performing kid that the parents chastise because they got all A's but one A-.
Yeah, right. Right. So my latest thing was, like, whatever this next product is, right, it is going to fail in the eyes of Wall Street and analysts and all of Apple's competitors, and everybody's going to point at it and fail because, and I said this on my show as well, unless it's a transporter, a food replicator, or a flying car, they blew it.
Yeah, or a perpetual lap dance.
Yeah. Right, they blew it. Sucks.
You know, realistically, it has to be a combination of all of those. But it'll still be wrong because the screen isn't big enough.
Well, okay, I'm glad that we're on this vector because it is something that I want to talk about, which is pushing the outlandish expectations of Apple aside. There are mm-hmm. things that you should be thinking about, or rather they should be thinking about, and
yes.
I'm curious to know what they're going to be doing this year. And I think that for me, a couple ideas are that one, they really need to focus on iOS and moving it far past what Android is offering right now, because what Apple has always been doing with their products are taking really great hardware and putting the great software in there that most of the companies can do with hardware, but they just haven't been able to do so well with software.
Okay, wait. I want to ask you then. So what is Android doing in software that Apple isn't doing and is failing at?
Well, that's exactly
right
it. Android, it has essentially replicated everything that Apple does well with iOS at this point. And they have a couple unique things depending on which cell phones you go to. There's more drawing. There are unique features across the board, but not many that are that compelling that I could really point to one, honestly. But there is parity.
But see, that's my point.
No, the point is that there's parity between the two. There's really not much of a difference, although you can say that the difference, I guess the biggest difference between the two is in
How
the
about,
way that
malware?
Things are accomplished.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Okay. Jeff took the words out of my mouth.
There you go. They have way more malware than iOS does.
But you can't sell that as well as better
features.
I don't like to harp on it, but there's also fragmentation, which you know only affects somebody if they're jumping between phone manufacturers. I mean,
Absolutely.
You stick with one manufacturer, you're probably going to get around that. So I see that as a little bit of a, is red herring the right word? You know?
I honestly don't think you can argue
that, you know, iOS, that is an advantage to iOS, is it does not suffer from the software fragmentation.
Yeah, I would agree completely. But in reality, people who are thinking, I don't really want an iPhone anymore, or I just want a smartphone that'll take care of business and it won't be too expensive kind of thing, or I want a phone that will have a big giant screen. Those mm-hmm. are the cases that Apple really isn't addressing because the threat of malware isn't that great. It's nothing like Windows on Android. Although
that's going to change. I mean,
sure, definitely.
It's growing. We just had the folks from ESET at our user group meeting, and that is the number one area of their business that they're expanding into, is addressing malware on Android.
Now, what,
it's growth industry for them.
What do you do? That's interesting. That's a bad sign for Android.
Yeah, it's a growth industry. That's a problem.
What do you? What's the? What are their solutions for it? Other than saying download our antivirus software.
No, that's the solution.
Okay.
So you get you get to run antivirus on your cell phone.
That sounds like the worst. That sounds like hell.
And the antivirus companies are pissed off at Apple because they can't make their products for iOS.
Well, thank goodness for us.
Yeah, but I mean, we have to be careful, though, too. I mean, so if someone can figure out something on the iOS side, I don't know the nitty-gritty of, are we only protected because of, I don't assume that we're protected just because of the sandbox and the lockdown system. Maybe we are, but I can't imagine.
I'm almost positive that we are.
Every threat.
Think about it this way.
But I mean, someone can still slip a program into the App Store. I mean, it's happened a million times with, you know, like tethering apps and things like stuff gets by, right?
Sure.
So there is, if somebody were determined enough, they potentially could slide through there and get something in there. I guess at that point, though, then it's also sandboxed off from the rest of the system. So what it could actually do damage-wise, I guess, would be mitigated as well.
Well, not necessarily. Now, I have to say that early on, before we had the public jailbreak, there were quite a few solutions that the dev team were using that were based around just simply writing applications through the standard vectors that Apple provides, using your developer keys to install applications, custom applications that you're creating that have not been sent through the App Store, that would not essentially or ostensibly get through the App Store approval process. But those vectors can be used to get past the sandboxing.
Okay.
Now, how many of those can still
be used? Yeah, and you're also proving my point, though, which is I don't want to get too arrogant about,
absolutely, because stuff can get passed, but for the most part, stuff won't get passed, thankfully, because we have the gatekeepers.
It's a lot harder, and so I've generally found that hackers tend to be lazy.
Yeah.
And they also want to have the most impact.
Right.
Right? So by the nature of those two things, it's going to be much easier to go after Android.
Right.
True. And ultimately, the only way to ensure that your computer or smartphone is completely impervious to malware is to not turn the device on. So, yeah.
So just another reason to be happy that Android is actually winning in terms of sheer numbers, too.
Sure. But I have to say that back onto the what Apple needs to do with iOS, I'm not sure if I might have mentioned it many episodes ago, but I think that there are quite a few things that they need to do with iOS. One is they need to provide try before you buy options, and not through the current crap model that we have right now with the light versions. It needs to be shareware style, where developers have the option to just simply check a box and it says, you can try the app for 7 days, fully functional, give it a try. And at the end of it, all your data is still here, but when you open it up, it says, hey, sorry about this. This app costs $5. You used it. Hopefully you liked it. If you did, give us $5, type in your password and go, and then you own the application and there you go. And then the other thing that they need to do on that same line is allow developers to do paid upgrades, because there are so many issues with not allowing paid upgrades. Because at this point, developers have to, at some point during the development cycle, when they push out version 25 of their application that cost them $3 and a lot of people got when it was version 1, they're going to want some more return on investment there, because it's not free to make a new version to do the development work that they're doing. And having a version that's completely branched off and separate really causes a lot of issues for what they ultimately want to do, which is provide the best products for their customers, where cases like 1Password was upgraded and people didn't even know about it. And I know this because I see the comments on Appler all the time saying, 1Password was upgraded? Where did this come from? Or even with like Instacast, I didn't know that Instacast had a new version last like November or whatever, and until a couple weeks ago when I saw that again on Appler.
Is that a whole new app?
It is a whole new app, yeah.
Oh yeah. See, I haven't gotten exactly. Any, somebody told me about that recently as well, and I had missed that. Well, and that brings up the other problem, which is the whole discovery, and I mean, what you're ultimately talking about, I think, is Apple needs to solve the iOS app problems more than anything else, and there's a bunch of them. You pointed out too, in my mind, another one, and I've been talking about this a lot with a lot of people, is the whole pricing models.
Yeah.
They're just, I really feel in talking to a lot of developers that beyond a small subset of different kinds of apps, and there's different ones that can get past this, but overall it's really not a sustainable model for a lot of developers. And so what we're seeing happen now is developers are trying to get creative, as they should, right? I mean, they're doing the thing that we said the music industry needed to do and the movie industry needed to do, is like, you have a new model, a new business model that's been created by a marketplace that was set up. You know, let's not point fingers to how the marketplace became what it was, but there's a marketplace, right? And this marketplace works in a certain way and has certain limitations and restrictions. And so developers are now getting creative about that. And we're seeing a lot more of these freemium apps, but I'm starting to see a lot more people complain about what developers are doing in these freemium app models to help create a sustainable business model for themselves. And it just gets, again, it gets me really frustrated, because it's like, consumers, you got to understand, you are a little bit responsible for this. Apple is a little bit responsible for this, and the developers are responsible for figuring out, you know, how to make money. And some are doing it well, and some are, you know, making mistakes, and some are just flat out greedy and egregious. But you can't lump everybody all together and say, oh, all these developers who are doing in-app purchases and things that time out and I always have to buy more are doing it because they're trying to screw me, right? They're trying to figure out how they can pay their teams of developers and work within the model that they've been given. And they're trying things. They're experimenting, because this is a whole new ground. No one's had to do this before. So they're trying to find a model, and they're going to make mistakes, right? They're going to try a model that everybody hates, but they're not going to know how people are going to react till they actually try some of these things. So we're seeing some of this experimentation. And if we don't want that to happen, then we have to change the model, or change the rules of the model, so that developers can have a sustainable business in some way or another, whether that's driving app pricing up, whether that's allowing paid upgrades would go a long way to solving that problem. I also think that allowing free trials would go a long way to solving that problem, because between those two things, developers could charge more for their apps, because consumers would know, okay, I can try it for 30 days, and if I don't like it, I don't have to buy it.
Yeah, there would be so many more applications that I would try out that are of much higher caliber than most free applications, or even applications that offer a free light version.
Yeah, but you'd be able to see the value. So a developer could say, hey, I'm going to charge $20 for my app. I know there's a bunch of $4.99 ones in the store, but mine's $15 better.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you try it, you will see.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. And you know, honestly, this doesn't have a high selling point to consumers. The idea that the shareware is there, and that paid upgrades, especially, that just doesn't sound that great on the surface. But when you think about it, who are we really catering to? I would say a majority of this is for developers, but also, I mean, the shareware part is definitely for consumers. And the thing about it is, if we don't have an app ecosystem that is economically viable for high quality developers to put out their products and make the platform a great platform to have, then they're going to go somewhere else where the marketplace is much more open.
Yeah. Luckily, the advantage to date is that those more open marketplaces are really bad experiences. I mean, that's the one thing.
Luckily,
you know,
right
as hard as app discovery is in iOS, you know, or can be, right? At least when you go into the app store, just getting around and finding stuff and buying stuff is dead simple and easy. It can be sometimes hard to find that thing that you're looking for, but they have that those same problems on those other marketplaces, plus the whole experience just is awful.
Yeah, well, all they have to do is just do a little bit of copying in terms of experience, and then there's really not a lot of competition.
Yeah, but again, it's kind of fragmented too, right? Because you've got Google's got their store, and then each phone developer has their store, and then developers can also deliver those apps themselves through their websites. And, you know, like as a consumer, I just can't imagine like just managing all that, especially too. Think about like when you want to re-download something. Right. Well, for us, you just go to the app store, right? If I get a new device and I want to put that app that I bought on my iPad on that device, I just open up the app store and I download it.
Right.
I don't have to remember, oh, I bought that. Did I buy that on Google Play? Did I buy where? Oh, yeah. Right.
Right. And then add in the frustration of, oh, with my new smartphone, I can't use this other store that I was using. Therefore, I no longer have access to this app. I either have to buy it again. Oh, wait, it's not available on the other store. It's just gone. Great.
Yeah. There is a lot of that. And I feel that that kind of issue isn't an issue that someone who's looking to buy an Android phone is either going to be presented with or really think too much about. It's going to be something that they run into maybe down the line.
that's better, right?
Well, they've already bought into the system and now they're locked in for 2 years. Now, what the greater benefit again is...
see what I'm getting at though? I mean, so what's your mental process when you do discover those limitations a year into your contract?
Well, it's kind of, well, that sucks.
And
I don't
want to have that experience again when my contract comes due,
sure,
right?
Right.
Sure. But at the same time, it's also, I'm not saying that that's not a completely valid and excellent thing that will hopefully occur. But I'm also saying that it's very important for the platform to have great opportunities for good developers to put stuff on there in the first place and not run into a situation where gradually developers are less and less turned on by the idea of developing for iOS and start moving to a system that ostensibly seems more open, which is something that more and more developers are kind of thinking about.
But also has more rampant piracy too.
That's a really good point.
I hear these stories and it blows my mind that developers get that ripped off by piracy on the Android side.
I'm not aware
when
of that.
The apps are so cheap.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I've read a couple stories recently that a lot of developers on the Android side are finding, you know, because they also get access to a lot of data and information too, that, you know, in some cases, developers, you know, 90% of their app, they notice that 90% of the time the app is being pirated.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's awful.
Yeah.
That's an insane piracy rate.
You got to think that has to be the primary reason why Apple doesn't like jailbreaking. That has to be.
I think that's a bonus.
Really?
I think they don't want jailbreaking because it breaks the experience.
Well, I think that yes and no. Certainly, Apple does have a history of not liking the idea of putting easy-to-use screws on their devices. And I'm not even talking about current model devices. I'm talking like even going back to the original Macintosh kind of thing, where they don't want that to happen for that exact reason. But at the same time, there's a certain class of people that are going to go out and buy a triangular device, and they're not going to put like a bank robbery style blue ink explosion on the inside of a Mac and ruin the computer. They're not that adamant about it. They're not, honestly, it costcosts them a lot of money to do that. But then again, at the same time,
it also keeps the average user out.
It keeps the average user
down
out
on expenses.
Well, think about it though. At this point, thankfully, I think that jailbreaking has driven a lot of, or at least some development direction of iOS, because there are fewer and fewer reasons all the time to jailbreak. Honestly, there are very few reasons why I jailbreak at this point. And there are almost no reasons for the average person to jailbreak now. If you look 3 years ago, there are so many more reasons to jailbreak for the average person. Now the average
3 years ago, I was a jailbreaker.
Yeah. You were?
Sure.
Okay. See, and, yeah. But there's just no reason now for most people, which is great. It's great for two reasons. One, it's great because you don't have to go through the hassle of screwing around with your phone. And it's great because Apple is on the right path and they're listening to what people want, or at least just figuring it out. I don't remember where I was going with that.
Well, then how about if I toss in another jailbreaking thing? So it's a good thing to have the jailbreak market for Apple. And I'm sure they're fine with it. They just won't say anything because it's a great test bed. And so Apple can watch what's happening in the jailbreak market, figure out what features people are really clamoring for, see how they're implemented through the jailbreak community, mm-hmm. copy them, and put them in iOS.
Yes.
And it's free for Apple because they're not having to pay any of these developers. It's just free research.
Yeah. And I also I do think that a primary reason, it seems less likely that the reason they want to keep people from jailbreaking is to just keep them from screwing around with their phones. I think it's more because they want high security on their devices, because by the nature of what a jailbreak is, it's a security exploit that has been used for what the user wants rather than a bad guy, right? And it also helps piracy, and I guess maybe in a quarter of what they care about is the carriers, what they don't want them to be unlocking.
Yeah. Yeah. And just for the record, from what I've heard, most of the piracy on Android is coming out of China.
Hmm.
But that therein lies the problem, right? Because you're talking about huge, huge numbers.
Yeah, that's a crazy huge market.
So, like, I just pulled up this one article. I guess there was a game called Dead Trigger on Android by a developer called Madfinger, and the app was priced at $8, and they were having a lot of piracy, and so they thought, well, maybe if we drop the price, the piracy will go down, and so they took it down to $1. This was one of the stories I was reading, and I think this came from AndroidPolice.com or something like that. They said even after dropping the price, their piracy rate was still at 80%.
Wow.
And then they pointed out that another game developer had high piracy rates on their apps. They made it free, and once they made it free, then their piracy rate actually went lower than it was on iOS. I'm assuming jailbroken devices on iOS. So it went from, it went to 12% on Android and 15% on iOS. But that was only after they made it free. And before the game was made free, they had something like a 60% or an 80% piracy rate. So, that's not to, and again, I'm not trying to bag on Android here. I'm just trying to point out, where some of the advantages currently for a developer on iOS are.
Sure. And I think that definitely goes back to the shareware / trial need on iOS, because at this point their developers are competing with piracy and Apple is competing with piracy again, as they were with music, and they need to provide a better experience than you get with the pirates. And the better experience, of course, would be, here you go, try it out, see why it's better, see why you will in the end feel compelled to say, you know what? This app is really great. I want to give you $5 or $10 because it's just awesome and it really helps me out. Or yeah, it's
we
a all, fun I, game.
We also have to change some things about consumers' attitudes about app
Certainly,
pricing
but,
on
but
iOS
it would go
devices,
a long
too.
Way to to help. You know. I mean, it would, even Shareware would help out the pricing thing too. Yeah.
But I don't want to take the consumer's culpability out of this problem, and I definitely don't want to take Apple's culpability out of this problem. Not just in terms of some of the policies, you know, that are enforced on developers in terms of selling apps, but also in terms of just how Apple is pricing its own applications on iOS.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, when Apple comes out and makes, you know, their apps $10-$15 for, you know, Pages, and I mean the iWork applications, which are really robust, really sophisticated apps.
Really,
I mean,
inexpensive.
Yeah. And so it makes it hard for an app developer who comes out and, you know, creates a really great 3D modeling application for iOS, that if had he built that same system for a Mac 10 years ago would be charging, or not 10 years ago, 5 years ago, would be charging hundreds of dollars, right? $200, $300, $400. And now he's got to charge $5, $4.99, $10.99 maybe, if he's lucky, $15.
Yeah, that's pretty harsh.
You know, and I think consumers don't, and consumers don't realize that it's not, yes, it's relatively simple to learn programming for an iOS device, but as you get deeper in and more sophisticated in terms of your application, it's not easy. And Apple's also done a great marketing job of making it seem like, oh, here's the SDK. All you have to do is download it and you can build an app.
No, it's not that easy.
but it is at a certain level, right? I could probably download the SDK and show most people how to write a basic application in a day. I'm talking, you know, like a Hello World kind of application, right?
Sure.
So it's, but you could do that with any language. But, you know, people get the idea that why should they be charging so much for this stuff? Because it's easy to make iOS apps. My brother-in-law made one. Well, there's a lot of people making really low quality or simple apps. And yes, it can be done. But, you know, there's a huge difference between just making a simple app and actually developing a sophisticated application that, you know, has all kinds of functionality built into it.
Right.
Right. Yeah, just because you can plug in a toaster, that doesn't make you an electrician.
Right. Right. But, I mean, as these devices get simple and as those layers go away, I think it's reasonable for consumers to, you know, fall into that belief.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because, Apple pushes that belief.
It's an important thing for them to push, though, because they want developers
on their
platform.
They also
platform.
Have to be careful, right? you do this, you build an app, you'll be a millionaire. All your problems will be solved.
Yeah, well, that is really irritating, I have to say. Now, okay, so we've definitely touched on a really big problem with iOS. It's something that they need to fix. I also want to talk about something that I feel they need to add, or you could say improve. And I think that one of the biggest things that Apple should be focusing on with the next version of iOS, and I really do believe that it needs to be this next version of iOS and not the iOS 8 version or iOS 9, is the idea of your device providing more information for you on a sort of push basis rather than a pull sort of get. You see, right now, a lot of the information that you need day to day, it's pretty easy to look it up. But I think that there's a large spectrum of information that your phone could do a better job at figuring out what you need when it's time. And you can see a little bit of that with what Passbook does for you. When you walk into Starbucks and it automatically has your Starbucks card right on the device and you slide and go.
You know, it's funny you say this because this was the single topic Brian and Chaffin and I talked about on Apple Context Machine this week.
Really?
Yeah. And we were talking about this and Google Now. And
that's, yeah.
And basically what it came down to was Google Now is far ahead of what Apple is doing, but Apple has the potential to be able to do far more than Google Now.
Absolutely. And that's precisely what I'm thinking about. Right now, Apple acquired Siri, what, 5-6 years ago, something like that?
Has it been that long? Wow, time flies.
I think it's been a while. I think, what was it, 2000? No, okay. I'm going to say 2008. So that's 5 years. 5 years. Maybe four. I don't know. But it's been a while. And they haven't, they haven't seemingly done a lot with what they've done. Because if you look at Siri, the application, before Apple got it, and Siri, the application, went away, it did a lot more than Siri does even now.
Well, see, so I'm wondering
like
if
5 years, Michael, but it was 2010.
Okay, so 3 years.
All right, so 3 years. Apple has been able to build Siri in at the operating system level. That was probably a very significant task to complete. And it wouldn't surprise me if Apple is now in the position where they have to strike up some licensing or at least business agreements with companies.
Well, certainly they need data providers to do a lot of the stuff that they want to do.
Right. And then Apple has to figure out how much do they want third-party companies to handle and how much do they want to handle themselves. And then either way, there's an infrastructure that has to be built up.
You got to think that there's a lot of, once the Apple Maps thing happened, there must have been a lot of recoil with the guys who are, you would assume, are working on this. We're presuming they're working on this. And you'd think that they probably are, based on the direction of some of the stuff, again, with like Passbook is going. But they have to say, whoa, hold on. We've got all this data from all these different places that seemingly have some good data, but the way we combined it or whatever happened with Apple Maps, it's not gelling exactly the way that we want it. We have to be a little bit more careful with the way we approached that sort of data aggregation in the future with whatever we plan on doing.
My guess is that there were a lot of developers on staff at Apple before iOS 6 shipped saying, we're going to have a problem. This is going to be a problem mm-hmm. with Maps. And Scott Forstall's all like, it's all fine, or whatever it is that he would say.
You're right.
And then iOS 6 ships, there's the backlash, and Forstall eventually gets the boot. And now these developers are going, look, we told you. And now since there's not that layer of, it's no problem, Apple's listening to what the developers are saying, which has probably slowed down the development process for certain features that they were planning on rolling out.
Well, yeah.
Wow. I just thought of something right now because, I don't know, we're going to get into the rumors of the next iPhone, right? In a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't want to give away too much, but
go for it.
I've been thinking about for a long time one of the things that movie tickets on Fandango or whatever, and they added the update where I can like tell Siri to buy tickets, but really what it just does is it just launches the Fandango app, and then I still have to like plug in, you know, you still have to like go through that buy process.
Yeah.
Right, she can't just like buy the ticket for me and put it in my Passbook. I want it to get to that point. So I was kind of thinking about that as you were talking about, you know, this sort of idea that you have more information pushed at you or what have you. And that got me thinking about one of the next features they're talking about is that, you know, fingerprint scanner, because Apple acquired the thing that biometric scanning, fingerprint scanning company, I think a year or so ago. I can't remember when that was, right?
Yeah, I think it was last year, actually.
There's this rumor that there would be a fingerprint scanner on the home button. And I've also, you know, used Apple's Easy Pay system in their stores, and we've talked about this on the show in the past too, right? This whole idea that Apple needs to add NFC, and I keep thinking, no, what Apple really needs to do is just tie payment systems in to my iTunes account and then open up that ability, that payment system, to other retailers, other stuff. So This is where all this is going. I'm thinking, how awesome would it be if you walk into Starbucks, right? You order your coffee. Siri knows you're there and you have your smartwatch or whatever. And it's just like, would you like to pay for that, you know, with your iTunes account? Yes, I would. And then you put your fingerprint on the fingerprint scanner so it knows that it's you. and it just makes the payment. You walk out. And it could do the same thing for movie tickets. It could do the same thing for all kinds of purchases.
You know, I want to take it a step farther. And when I walk into Starbucks, I want Siri to chime in and say, "Hi, Jeff, I see you're in Starbucks. Would you like me to order your usual drink?"
Yes.
And I say, "Yes, please." And the drink order goes in. And
it's pushed to the register.
It's pushed to the register. The baristas are they see it right there. And they say, "Hey, Jeff, we have your drink order.
Have a nice day."
Yeah, have a nice day, and it's all been handled. Siri paid for it, and you're just waiting for your drink to hit the counter.
What you really are looking for is you want Siri to be what she claims to be, which is
yes,
a personal assistant. We're talking.
But what I'm saying is all that technology is there. It's just going to take it's going to take a lot of effort to develop. So it could just be that Apple has a lot, like you guys were saying, there's a lot of deals that have to get struck. There's a lot of things that have to happen to make that happen. So I think a lot of the times when everybody's being critical and like, "Oh, Apple's got to do this, they got to do that. What are they working on? It seems like they're not doing anything. They're not innovating." I think all this stuff is being worked on. It's just a matter of when is it going to be integrated and ready to show the public. And Apple really just doesn't tip their hand early on this sort
of
stuff.
And there's a lot of stuff, too, with one of the things that Google now does, and correct me if I'm not exactly right on this, but when you want to, like, let's say you have a meeting scheduled across town or an hour or two away kind of deal, and so you're hopping in your car getting ready to go, and that meeting is in your appointment book, and your phone or Google now says, "Hey, I see that you're going to be heading off to this appointment in a half hour or so. You're going to want to take a different route because right now it's pretty bad, or we think it's going to be pretty bad by the time you get there," sort of thing. "So I've planned a better route for you," kind of deal like that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things that you have to be cautious about, and one of the things that Apple is famous for being very aware of, is the implications on the overall experience in terms of battery life of what that sort of feature would have. Because you don't want to have your GPS running all the time. And I think, honestly, even with the geofencing, it's really smart the way that it works is it sort of works on the Wi-Fi and cell tower stuff that's already seemingly going in the background until it needs more specificity, and then it kicks on the GPS. But I think that still there are some bugs that they need to iron out if you want to keep up the great battery life that Apple devices are now known for.
Right. But I mean, you're right to your point. I mean, they could even today leverage the geofencing thing, right? And know that, Siri knows your schedule, right? You have an appointment. It's in the next 30 minutes. It's this far away, and you just left the house, right? So it could chime in at that point and say, "Hey, are you on your way to your meeting?" Right. "Yes." "Oh, I noticed, the traffic route is that this," or even just, I'd love it if it just like could pop up and say, "Oh, do you need directions?" "Oh yeah, that's right, I do. I didn't bring up maps yet. Yeah, can you give me the directions?" And then it would just jump into Maps. You're right. I mean, it could be a lot more interactive. It could be a lot more powerful. It could become more of an assistant
or
than
learning,
it is right now.
Learning more about what your standard activities are when you hop in your car. Maybe you open up, instead of the music application, maybe you open up SoundCloud a lot and you listen to the most recent stuff on your SoundCloud. You hop in the car and it sees that, "Oh, okay, you're hooked to this device. Let me open up. Do you want to open up SoundCloud now?" Because, and you say, "Yeah, sure, right, Siri, go for that and play me whatever." So I think that, honestly, that's the next thing that they really need to do. And that sort of really hit me when I, last week, it's weird, I put the show up and left the house, and I was on my way to Chicago to go see a show. And I didn't do what I usually do, which is check to see if the show propagated out to the podcatchers. And I figured it would be fine because I do the same thing every week or you know, whenever I do the show. And, well, my phone, about 20 minutes after I left the house, beeped at me. And I'm like, what is that? Oh, okay, cool. The show's up. Good. All good. We don't have to worry about anything else. My phone told me it's all cool. And at that point, my phone was my personal assistant. It wasn't merely a tool for accessing information when I request it. It was ahead of me in knowing
and
what I would
need to
know.
And that's very cool.
Yeah. And that's what I think needs to be addressed by Apple. That is the next big thing, as evidenced by Google Now and the little bits and pieces that we have right now with our devices.
Well, yeah, and that, and I mean, and plus they're going to have to open that thing up at some point. And Siri, I don't know what they're waiting on for that. You know, there has to be better integration with a lot. Again, going back to the developer relations and things like that, why don't developers have access to Siri yet? And I hope that it's just because they've been working on all those integration points.
Yeah, I think that could probably be it.
By the same token, iCloud is another huge fiasco that Apple has been ignoring that they have to deal with. And not that the technology is not good. It works great in Pages, you know, on iOS. It sucks in Pages on the desktop. Well, I guess it's better now that we have it in, Mountain Lion. But, you know.
Yeah. And I think that definitely.
If you didn't upgrade yet.
That definitely does speak to what the issue very likely is, which is that they have it working with the tight integration that they have right now. But in order to bring it to that next level where third-party developers can have access to APIs that allow them to integrate with iCloud and with Siri stuff, they need to make sure that they've ironed out the bugs and made sure that it will work the way that it would be expected. Now, you can say, well, there are some ways for developers to integrate with iCloud right now, and they kind of suck for a lot of applications. And you know, it's limited right now. And yeah,
that's a problem in my mind. It's preventing definitely. Apple from doing a lot of things that I think, and especially developers from doing a lot of things that they'd want to do. Yeah, and I think they've got to fix it. Either that, or just dump it and let us continue to use. You know. I don't understand why Apple put the distraction out there for it, for developers, because in my mind right now it's a distraction, right? Because frankly, Dropbox works better and more apps are integrated with it. And the only reason being, I think, is just because it's so ubiquitous. And Apple needs to get that kind of ubiquity going with iCloud, and they're really, in my mind, failing.
Well, you also have to look at the fact that Dropbox allows you to just throw a file on a directory, whereas iCloud doesn't allow you to do that sort of interaction.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't even care about that so much.
Well, it's easier for developers to integrate with, though, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the problem that I see is that Apple, I don't think they see iCloud as the same thing as Dropbox, yet consumers do.
Yes.
And yeah, so we're looking at Dropbox and we're going, this is a file repository system. I organize it just like I organize files on my desktop, and that's the mindset. And Apple looks at iCloud as a conduit. This is not something to think about as a file storage system. It's a data moving system. Mm-hmm. And until they can figure out how to get us as consumers to get that's what they really want this to be, it's going to be a big problem. And it's Apple's own fault because they, I think, have done a horrible job of getting everything set up and ready to go for developers, because if it was easy for developers, they would be doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in total agreement with you there. So, at the end of the day, I think, though, what we're getting at is it's interesting to me that there's so much external pressure and attention being put on Apple about their hardware and what the next thing they're going to do in that arena is. But when you talk to people who are more intimately involved with the Apple community and stuff like that that's going on, it seems to be more of our concerns are focused on the operating system and the apps and the integration and all of those things.
Yeah.
And I get in the back of my mind, I hope that Apple has the, and I assume Apple has the same focus, which is why we're not seeing a whole lot changing on the hardware side. Because frankly, at the end of the day, I don't know that it really has to change that dramatically. And I don't even know what you would do to make it change that dramatically, other than these little token things that everybody's complaining about. Like, oh, they're just being iterative. Well, I mean, a tablet is a tablet. You can make it thinner. You can make a higher resolution screen. What do they want it to do that makes sense and is feasible?
Well, their expectations are too high. They're expecting a new version of something they've already seen to rock their world as much as seeing it the very first time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, well, I think most people, this whole thing about is it an iterative upgrade or is it some revolutionary new thing? It doesn't matter. There's a small yet vocal, very small yet vocal minority of people, and we're part of that group because we understand what all the pieces are, that get really wound up about what are the changes to the next version of the device. And if we don't see major changes, and I'm not talking about us in specific here, but us as the whole people that are kind of plugged into the technology world and are watching closely, if we don't see those big changes, then we're like, oh, Apple isn't innovating. And that's a big problem, I think, in a very small circle. For the most part, it doesn't matter what the megapixels are in the camera on the iPhone, and it doesn't matter if it has stereo speakers on the iPad. All that matters is that when the average consumer walks into an Apple store, they can actually buy a product and it's not backordered.
And that it's easy to use.
Yeah, well, the easy to use is given because that's why they're going to the Apple store to buy their iPhone or their iPad.
Right.
Yeah. Apple's, I mean, the day that Apple starts failing in that regard is that's when I'm going to start really worrying.
Which regard?
Getting panicked. Putting out products that are easy to use and, you know, and innovative in some way, right? And I don't mean that means every time that it, you know, they have to innovate. I don't get hung up on that. But, you know, if they start releasing a bunch of Me Too products, then as their new, quote unquote, new products, then I'm going to get worried. But, you know, if they bring out the first smartwatch that makes sense for a lot of people, you know, it's not just a smartwatch, then that's cool. That's what Apple is out in the world to do. Right? Or connected device or that thing that I hadn't thought about yet. As long as they keep releasing that and then those products are easy to use, then Apple's doing fine.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced about the whole smartwatch thing.
Me neither.
Neither am I. If any company could make a watch that would get me to wear one regularly, it would probably be Apple right now.
Sure.
Because it would have to give me something more compelling than telling the time on my wrist, because I don't mind pulling my phone out of my pocket.
So, and giving you push notifications and showing you your text messages. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of Pebble is really cool.
Yes. It's awesome.
But I didn't buy one because I don't think I would actually wear it enough to justify spending the money.
Right. I mean, let's say that every iPhone right now came with a free watch that let's not say that it's a gorgeous Johnny Ive type watch, but it's just a watch that...
Let's say it is.
Well, for the sake of this example.
Okay.
Right now, what Jeff said was very interesting. I don't wear a watch on my wrist because I'm fine with just pulling my phone out of my pocket. And that's how a lot of people are right now.
Yeah,
they're
we all
fine
gave up
with just pulling the dang thing out of their pocket, whether it's for the time or to check text messages or to check email or to see what that last alert was.
Check the weather, check the traffic, check the directions to the thing, get, you know.
certainly. Yeah. Now, if it was more, you could say, well, if it was more widgety or dashboard-like in that it provided you with several pieces of information that you want on a regular basis that you don't want to have to dig through your phone to get to, such as, well, the weather and the time, really, and then maybe what that last message was. A watch is somewhat compelling, but at the same time, it's not much harder than pressing the button on your phone to get to the weather, in that you just press the button and then you slide and then slide kind of deal.
Yeah. But what, again, like you were going to what we were talking about earlier with Siri sort of being smarter and proactive, right? If there's a mic on the thing, right, it could be smarter about someone says, hey, do you think it's going to rain?
Sure.
And it could preemptively switch to, oh, I bet you he might want to check, he's going to look at the weather next, or, you know, hey, do you know,
or he's going to go outside next, he's going to go somewhere next, kind of thing. Now, honestly, so that would be that goes in the direction of being more interesting for me, because there have been several occasions where I'm pulling stuff together, throwing on my coat kind of deal, getting ready to go out the door, and I want to know how cold it is outside. And there have been a couple of cases where I say, hey, Siri, how cold is it? And she tells me. And as I'm doing it, I'm kind of thinking, am I being a big dork and asking Siri where I could just, instead of doing that, I could swipe it and pull down and check the weather kind of thing.
Or step outdoors and then decide what coat to take.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
There is that.
But we live in 2013.
We live in modern times.
Sure. But and for the same reason that I don't walk outside, I also justify to myself that that's why I press the button and I let her tell it to me while I'm doing that one extra thing in the 5 or 10 seconds that it would take me to check the weather kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing something else while she's telling it to me. And again, that's the personal assistant kind of deal. But the personal assistant paradigm has not been pushed forward that greatly at this point, and I think that it's time for that to happen.
Well, and that would be the kind of thing that Apple would be doing that, again, everybody else isn't doing. Apple does not rush into, I mean, that's the thing, is I think people are pushing on this drive for them to innovate and do the next great thing, but Apple's not going to rush into that necessarily either. But
if it's not necessary,
not rushing or pushing a product out to, it's very false to make the assumption that they're not thinking about this stuff or working on this stuff, or, you know, and that's what gets me kind of frustrated. It's like, you guys have to realize everything that you've just thought of, they've thought of 10 times and more.
And they've probably tested it.
So you going, well, why haven't they done a smartwatch? They've probably done hundreds of smartwatches, thousands of smartwatches.
Yeah, well, there was a report.
They just haven't found the one that does anything that is relevant in their mind to what you would want it to do.
Yeah, you saw the report that Johnny Ive ordered like thousands of Nike watches back in 2000, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't see that in and of itself as an indication that Apple is working on a smartwatch.
Right.
I mean, keep in mind, Johnny did some work for Nike. Or Nike, Howard's the appropriate way to say it. It may very well be he bought up cases of what they were doing as gifts to give out to employees, or, you know, and maybe it was for research. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, I don't see that in and of itself as an indication that Apple is making a smartwatch that we're going to see in the next few months.
I agree. It certainly wouldn't make sense. Apple's new time frame is 13 years.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's new products. They'll tell us what it is and why we want it when they are ready.
Yeah. Well, Rene Ritchie says that we're going to be seeing the new iPhone in August, the iPhone 5S in August, and he has a pretty good track record with that.
Yes, he does.
And I would say that it certainly makes sense, too, because we saw the iPhone 5 in September. He's also
and that was a little too long. I think Apple waited a little too long on that release.
Was it like a year and a half?
For whatever reasons.
How long did we wait for the iPhone? That 5? Was
they usually would announce in June and then ship the first week, about the first week in July was kind of the before that was yeah. the was the release
oh, yeah,
schedule.
Yeah. Okay.
If I'm remembering right.
Yeah, they waited past summer. Gotcha. He's also saying that we'll probably see iPad, was it 5 now? Are we at 4? We're at 4.
Yeah.
So iPad 5.
We don't do numbers anymore, remember?
Well, new iPad. We'll have the new iPad.
The iPad with Retina display.
A new iPad
with Retina display.
And a new iPad mini in August.
Yeah, I'm waiting August, for... But, several generations when Apple releases the new iPad with Retina display.
Yeah.
Didn't I thought iMore was in the camp that Apple was very likely on this bi-yearly release cycle for the iPad and that the 9.7-inch would be spring and the update for the iPad minis would happen in the fall.
Yeah, well, that is addressed. It's not... I mean, these are rumors, so it's possible that we're just going to see the new iPad with Retina in the spring, and then we'll see the iPad mini in the fall. What he does say is, based on his rumors that he's heard, mm-hmm. it's possible that we'll see the iPad mini in the spring along with the new iPad, but it very likely won't be Retina. So it's whether or not there's going
to
be...
If they don't do Retina, what are they going to do to it? I guess would be my question.
Yeah, that would be my question too, honestly. But and I think that it would make more sense for them to hold off on just pushing out another iPad Mini to wait for the iPad Mini with Retina, because otherwise they're going to have a lot of upset people.
That is the number one, not complaint, but the number one requested feature that I've heard people say. Like, I would get an iPad Mini if it had a Retina display.
Yeah, me too. Honestly,
I don't hear anybody like, oh, if it only had a faster processor, or oh, if it only had a better GPU, or if only, I don't know what else, it had a better camera. No one's like, oh, I wish I had a 12 megapixel camera.
Right. I do think that I'm going to be getting the next iPad mini that is Retina.
Yeah.
You know, okay, this goes back to the average consumer. Bumping the processor, they aren't going to care. It's the thing that they can actually see that's going to matter.
Right.
And so on the iPad mini, while I actually really am totally fine with the display on the current model.
Me too.
When they bump up the resolution, that's going to be big news, and that's going to drive even more sales. Mm-hmm. So I could see where if the economics fit, the next iPad mini could be a Retina display model.
I think it almost has to be. I don't think they could get away with releasing another one. That's my point is,
yeah.
Unless they're ready to do it in this release, I think they wait. Because I just don't think it's compelling enough and it's too close to the current one. And plus, again, the fallback that I always have for all of these rumors is how well is the thing selling? And judging by the other rumor that we've heard that Apple's reportedly pulled back on unit orders of the iPad, the full-size iPad, and are bumping up production orders for the mini, that says to me the mini's still selling incredibly well. So why would they want to cannibalize those sales, you know, on the current model? Because they're going to have higher production costs if they go to, you know, Retina screens in terms of component part costs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why not maximize your profits for as long as you can? And I think Apple always does this. Right, they're going to maximize their profits as long as they can, and it's not until they see the mini sales trailing off. It's like, okay, now it's time to juice everybody and get all the people who have the non-Retina one to buy a new Retina one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys want to mention? I want to mention the Field Trip app that Google just released, just briefly, because. For the simple fact that it seems really cool and I haven't gotten it to do anything for me.
Perfect.
That sounds like a Google app.
It does, doesn't it? Are you guys
really,
familiar
really cool.
with the Field Trip app?
I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. So what this app does is it's supposed to allow you to wander around a city, and it will say, hey, you know that thing right over there? That's a really cool thing. Let me tell you more about it.
So that's neat.
It is cool. It's a great idea. But man, maybe I need to go somewhere more interesting. I just kind of assumed that I could go pan around on the map, and if I zoom in on a certain place, it would say, oh, here are all the different things. But either that's not how it works, or it doesn't work at all, because I might need to actually be in the place, or it doesn't have any information for Rockford or San Francisco or Chicago, which is kind of confusing.
I would imagine it has some information for San Francisco.
Certainly you would imagine San Francisco, but when I zoomed in on San Francisco, there was nothing there. So I must need to be there, or the app doesn't work.
Well, then how are you going to use the app to figure out ahead of time the cool places that you want to go see?
No, you can't.
I mean, if it's based totally on serendipity and chance, well, that's not nearly as useful as it could be.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. I'm going to go down to Miami next week and turn the thing on and see if it shows me anything cool. Which, by the way,
does seem to be very location based. So,
well, that's the thing about it, is it's for that. That is its main purpose. But you'd assume that if you have a map view, you could and it says zoom in to see cards. You'd think, okay, I zoom in and there should be something that shows up. So you guys haven't had any experience with it, I'm guessing.
I haven't downloaded it yet. No, this is the first time hearing about it. So
okay. It seems like a really cool application. I've heard some great stuff about it, but that was for Android though. So this is a new app to iOS. It's been around on Android for a while, so it'll be interesting to see how well it works.
I'm going to download it for sure.
Yeah, give it a try. There's probably going to be more interesting stuff in your area than mine. Then again,
I'm not even going to download it yet, because I'm betting there's nothing for us to spark.
You're basically like on the side of a mountain.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I'm always discovering interesting stuff through Yelp, to be honest.
Yelp is pretty cool. I've had really good luck with Yelp, much to my surprise.
Okay, so I got a question for you guys. How do you guys find... I'm going to be traveling next week. I want to find a place where I can find some good craft beer.
On Yelp.
Yeah, I'm in Yelp. I got that part. Do I type craft beer?
Yeah, and type craft beer. And then look for, five-star reviews.
I've never seen a five-star review. Well, individuals.
Five-star reviews.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
But more importantly, for craft beer, I would use Untappd. If they have it, you're going to Florida?
Yeah.
I don't know which cities they're in yet, but Tap Hunter.
Hmm. Yeah, I could check that out. That'd be cool.
But that probably wouldn't necessarily tell you local craft beers. That would tell you more where good craft beers are on tap.
I don't really care about...
would be a good choice.
I don't really care about local beer so much as I'd want to just find good beer somewhere.
Yeah, then use Tap Hunter if they have it in... are you going to be in Miami?
Yeah.
Beach. They probably have Miami. I haven't...
You'd think so.
But they would have to have Miami.
Well, they're a small...
If they're going to be in Florida,
They've been growing. The developers are here in San Diego, so they started here in San Diego, and they are slowly expanding out cities. But it takes infrastructure, because they have to have a system where bar owners and things like that can submit when they change their tap lists into the system and update them. And so it's pretty complicated, but it's an amazing system for the cities that they have it rolled out in. But they've been growing as quickly as they can, I think. But you've got to roll it out kind of city by city. And so they started with, they're starting with the biggest cities and working their way down like you would with anything else. But yeah, that's what I use for discovering. Those two apps are really what I use for discovering beer, if that's what you're looking for.
Cool. I'll give it a try.
But Yelp could work really well too. Yelp, I've had really good luck with restaurants, with finding different services. Like I had to get my car smogged today, and the place that I go to now, I discovered a few years ago on Yelp, and they're freaking awesome. And also my mechanic I found through Yelp.
Cool.
So
sure. Actually, this week I found what I consider to be the single best sashimi restaurant in Boulder, and for all I know, in the whole Front Range of Colorado. And it was thanks to Yelp.
Yep. My local game store, where I get all my board games now, I had no idea there was one like really near me, and it's probably the best game store in San Diego, and we've got two or three good ones. So,
have you guys tried TripAdvisor?
Yeah, for travel?
Yeah.
Sure.
Does it work pretty well? I have to say the iPad app sucks ass. It's the worst. It does not follow any sort of convention that I can think of or that I can suss out of it. But the iPhone app is pretty decent. It showed me a couple interesting things to do and check out. And I'm sure it'll be more interesting once I get down there, because we're not planning
on... Oh, for like sightseeing? I have not tried it. I've used it only for like hotels.
Yeah, for sightseeing, for finding cool things to check out. Yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't used it for that. Okay. I've used it like Adam.
That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for some. So, if there's an action item for this episode, it's help me find some cool things to check out in Miami Beach when I'm down there next week. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com, or you can Twitter me. Twitter me is easier, because then I'll get that immediately. Something inexpensive or free would be great, kind of deal. Because, you know, every once in a while, you just gotta take Will Smith's advice and go to Miami.
Yes, you do.
So did we prematurely get into our picks?
I think we kind of did, yeah. So let's, I haven't said my pick, but Adam, you want to go first with a pick?
Yeah, and I think some people are going to be surprised by this. Maybe, maybe not. But I'm going to pick Real Racing 3.
Ah, I kind of figured you would.
How did you figure I would pick that?
Because I saw that you liked it.
I did, and it's gotten some flack for this whole freemium model thing. So I was a little leery. Well, actually, first of all, when I heard it was a freemium model, I was like, no way. It's EA, you know, Real Racing. It's free now. I can like download it and play for free. And I had found out about it after it was getting all the flack about that, you know, they're kind of trying to force you to make in-app purchases to, because you have to like do repairs on your car. Like if you crash it in a race, you have to like fix it, and you use up oil, and you have to buy oil, and you have to do all this stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna try it. Mm-hmm. Graphics is amazing. Gameplay is amazing. I have been playing it free now since I downloaded it probably a week and a half ago. I have not spent a dime on it, and I almost feel bad. Like I'm probably going to get a $20, $30 game pack just to support EA, because they've built an awesome game. And if they would have just charged me $30, I probably would have paid it happily. I guess the problem is that, you know, even if I do that, I'm going to blow through, you know, sort of the credits that I bought at a certain point, and then I'm going to potentially have to pay again. But you really don't have to pay. What it forces you to do is wait. So you can still do your repairs, but they take a certain amount of time. And for me, I almost look like that is almost like a benefit, because, you know, I can play for
yeah,
an hour or whatever, and then it's like, okay, I got to take a break now for 30 minutes while it does those repairs. And it's almost a good thing. It sort of like pushes you away from it, because it's really addictive and fun. But the graphics are amazing. There's all kinds of cars that you can get, the tracks, you know, gameplay wise, it's your classic car racing game, right? You can tilt the iPad to steer back and forth, and but it's just a ton. I've been having a ton of fun playing it, and I've not been bothered at all. It's not really aggressive about like, hey, you need to buy this, you need to buy that. But you do get to a certain point where you have to do repairs on your car. But you can build up in the gameplay enough. If you win enough races and you earn credits and things like that, you can buy additional cars. So I have like three cars now. And so when one isn't working, I just go play the other ones. I don't know. I don't know what all the big hubbub is about.
I'll check it out. It's free to try. Just freaking try it.
And if, you know, you don't have to spend the money. I guess people are feeling like they have to spend the money, but you don't. You just have to be patient. So I guess if you're not...
Well, people aren't patient, so there you go.
So, but again, it's the developer, I think, experimenting and trying to figure out a way to, you know, not have to give the game away for $4.99 to get downloads.
It'll,
you know,
this
would be, if this was a console title, it would be a $60 title. You know, and most people are never going to spend $60 on it, which is a sad thing. I wish we could just get to the point where it's like, this is worth $60. The developers put all this time and effort building this awesome game, but they know that people won't pay that now. So they're trying to figure out, how do we get people to pay the equivalent of that over time? And that's the model they've chosen. So I think it was really an experiment. I think they got some flack, and I bet you for the next version, or even within this version, they start tweaking the model a little bit, you know, to make it a little more affordable. I could see how you could very quickly and easily, you know, spend hundreds of dollars on it. But you don't have to. So you make the choice. It's still an awesome game, regardless.
Cool. I will check it out. I'm downloading it right now.
It's fun.
So, Jeff,
see if you can beat me. Oh, the cool thing is it does this.
The time-shifted thing.
So, like, when you get on there, if you'll be in my little circle, you'll be able to race against me, but not. It's not in real time. The races that I did. You know, it's like almost that ghost car kind of stuff, but it's really neat. And so you kind of start out in the main pack, and then you have to win a race, and then once you've won a race, you can real time shift race against your friends and stuff like that. So you got to build your way up to it too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So Jeff, what's your pick this week?
My pick. All right, I'm taking everyone back out to space again.
Sweet.
Yes, my pick is an iPhone and iPad app, and it's called Wonders of the Universe. And it's $5 or $6, and it has just all this really interesting information. It's from BBC.
Oh, Brian Cox.
Yes. And so it has all this really interesting information about the universe, about our solar system. It talks about things down to the smallest particles, all the way up to stars, and so there's lots of videos that are built in, and you can travel to celestial objects around the universe, and it's just this really cool, very well designed space exploration and education app, and it's flat out beautiful.
Cool.
When is this episode going out, Michael?
Tonight or tomorrow morning.
If people rush really quickly, or maybe they'll just luck out because sometimes they leave them out longer, it was the free app download at Starbucks this week, I think.
Oh.
With the little Starbucks card. But they're going to be hard to come by because I think it was this week, right, Jeff, that they were giving those out?
Actually, it might have been last week. A lot of Starbucks, they have cards that sit around for a couple weeks. So swing by your Starbucks and see if they have a copy. Cool. Or a card.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Brian Cox is awesome, and he does some great stuff.
Yeah. They brought a bunch to my user group meeting. We have somebody who each month brings in a bunch of cards. I don't know where he gets them from, Starbucks, but usually brings in a stack.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's a plug for going to your user group meeting. That's the kind of cool stuff that happens.
I haven't been to my user group meeting in years.
Well, you need to start going, Michael.
Well, there are a bunch of people I don't...
There are a bunch of people that will benefit from you being there.
Yeah, I know. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So what's your pick?
My pick this week is the Kayak application, and even more than just the Kayak app, but kayak.com, but definitely the Kayak app. And if you don't know what Kayak is, you're using like Expedia to find fares and hotel rooms and stuff. What?
No, go ahead.
You're missing out because Kayak is awesome.
I use Expedia. I like Expedia.
Have you used Kayak? Have you checked out Kayak?
I've checked out Kayak in the past, yes.
I don't see. I used to be a big Expedia person until this trip. And I did great with Expedia, found great deals, whatever. I looked at Kayak a little bit, didn't really work for me. So I strayed away from it. But I have discovered the magic of Kayak now, because it's really the type of app and service that I have always wanted to find primarily flights, but it also does the cars and hotel rooms and stuff like that. But for flights especially, it is just magical, because what you do is you say, okay, I want to fly from Chicago to Miami. I want to leave this day, come back this day, this many travelers, the basic information that you give any site. Hit go, and it gives you, it aggregates prices from tons of different sites. Granted, Southwest is not included, but honestly, I found that in this case, didn't matter. I found a better flight than I could find with Southwest. And so the magic starts happening with the filters that you can do. So let's say, I don't necessarily need to fly out of O'Hare. I could fly out of Midway if I really want to, or I don't necessarily need to fly to Miami International Airport. I could fly to Fort Lauderdale. So you can say, I want to go from this area to this area. And it includes a couple different airports. And you can say only include these couple airports because this one's too far away. And then you say, okay, that looks really great. I found some much better prices, but you know, I don't really want to leave at 7:30 in the morning because that's ridiculous. So you say you can tweak, there's a little slider for departure time, and you say, I don't want to leave until 8 a.m. But then again, at the same time, I don't want to arrive past like 6 p.m. because that's ridiculous. I'm just wasting a whole day then. And so you can do that. And you can do the same thing in reverse. And you can say, I don't want to fly Spirit or US Airways or something like that. So you can uncheck those two boxes. And you can, I mean, there are just so many different filters. You can filter stops and price, and it's just great. So if you haven't used Kayak on your iPhone, it's just so handy to just fool around with if you're planning on going somewhere, because I think that you'll probably find a much better place. Oh, one of my favorite things that I didn't really realize you could do is, until I was really playing around with the interface, is that you can say, oh, okay, I've found, because what it does is it does a bunch of aggregation, and the flight that you choose get there is not necessarily linked to the flight that takes you back home, sort of thing, but it shows you that grouped together. But what you can do is you see, oh, there, here's one flight that's mashed up with a bunch of other flights that will leave at a really convenient time. So I want to find only flights that leave at that convenient time, and then see how that compares to the flights that I can get along with that take me back home. And you can just see that it's really great. You can filter it down a whole bunch, and it gives you awesome prices. So definitely check it out. The Kayak app is free, and there's a Kayak Pro application that lets you do flight tracking. It's a buck. I haven't tried it because I have another app that does that, but it's great. I love it. So check it out. Yeah. So with that, you can find our iPhone picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Our show this month is sponsored, of course, by Squarespace with coupon code WHC3 to get 10% off to start an awesome website with them. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's at jgamet on Twitter. Thank you for being here, Jeff.
Sure thing. And I'm on app.net, so same username.
Yeah, me too. I'm on app.net, but not the same username as Jeff. It's Michael Johnston.
Because that would be kind of creepy.
It would be confusing. It'd be hard to get a hold of us if we shared an app.net account.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, maccast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, member.maccast.com is the show. The premium show, I should say.
Yep. Thanks.
And thanks for the app.net invite. And thanks to
you're welcome. I'm sorry. I'm busy on Kayak now looking for flights to Salt Lake City for Nerdtacular.
There you go. It's fun, huh?
Well, I just discovered I can fly out of Carlsbad instead of San Diego, which is closer to me.
Bingo.
And it's not that much more expensive.
Yeah, see, that's where the real magic is.
It's actually
closer is good.
I would pay more for parking.
Yeah, there you go.
In San Diego than I would.
Well, that's compelling.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's that. Oh, I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, of course, at GetAppler. GetAppler.com, GetAppler. Thanks to Michael Vezzi, I guess that's how you say his last name, for the invite for Appler on app.net. It's just Appler on app.net because we didn't have to use the get part. I wonder if that's going to be confusing in the future. But I guess I have aspirations that I'm at some point going to be able to just get Appler.com, and the spam bots that have it right now are going to give it to me.
We live in hope.
Yeah. So with that, we'll see you next week or next time. And we have communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. And an internet communicator.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we gonna do? So what are we gonna do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're gonna use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away, and you lose them. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. No, 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 no. You have to get them and put them away, and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus.